Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Again, Mr. Edwards, good evening, and how are you today?
Don, I can't complain as it pertains to the weather. Beautiful evening here in our beloved Shangri-La, the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. You know, almost at the top of the world kind of thing. Boy, we had a cold spell there both yesterday and the day before.
Yes, we did.
It felt like it was early April. I mean, I don't know what's happening up there in the atmosphere and the stratosphere and et cetera, but whatever it is, they're not telling us. But this has been one interesting year. Storms out on that East Coast. I know you were talking to relatives and et cetera out there in Baltimore. Man, they're being pounded with some freaky kind of weather. You know what I'm saying, Don? So
yes, yes.
I'm not quite sure. But, you know, on that particular note, I mean, we can kind of have a little levity and et cetera, try to get away from the violence. But our international desk is reporting tonight and giving us some inside information. We've been in touch with them through our IABN network, if you will. The international desk is a new development that we have facilitated as a part of negotiations that have been going on quietly for the last number of weeks. International desk talking to us and concurring with reports by Al Jazeera, if you will, and Reuters, four young Palestinians playing soccer, Don, playing soccer on the beach there in Gaza, or around the area of Gaza City, in a basically non-threatened area. In fact, a lot of foreign journalists were present when this happened. Israeli naval vessels were pounding the waterfront there, and these young men were killed instantly, if you will, four others wounded. In fact, one will lose one of his limbs, his leg. Pete Summer saying, according to our international correspondents, that there looks like there's a temporary humanitarian, what we call down in humanitarian ceasefire. that's cute.
Oh.
And that there has been a lull in the exchange, if you will, between Israeli military forces and Hamas. Of course, overwhelming power with respect to the Israeli / Jews. Airplanes, American aircraft, American munitions, and et cetera. over 200... approaching 220, as I understand it, Palestinians officially dead. Notice what we said in our international desk, warning us that a lot of times those that are blown apart, you know, you're a military person, you understand what I'm saying, those are actually blown apart, and you probably can't even find the body parts, are sometimes not counted, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Casualties, fatalities are counted based on what's in the morgue. But if you've been hit by an American-made 155 millimeter or 105 millimeter, again, you as a in fact, I think, Mr. Allen, you were an artilleryman, weren't you, or were you just an infantryman?
I was an infantryman, but I shot up to the 50 caliber and then the law. And I know if those things hit human flesh, there's not much to put together afterwards.
Okay, that is consistent with what we're getting from, again, from our international desk. We have been in contact with some of our international people in England, if you will. We're getting their information directly from Al Jazeera and Reuters, if you will. British Broadcasting Company talking in terms of the disproportionate casualties, if you will. The Obama administration and the State Department maintaining that they don't have a position about the disproportionate number of Palestinians that are dying. I guess this is a part of an American tradition where as long as it's people of color, what the hell? You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Exactly.
It's not like it's, well, it's not like it's Ukrainians. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
Some Ukrainians killed earlier today in the eastern Ukraine. They're along the Russian border. It appears the Russians have shot down a couple of Ukrainian aircraft, including a helicopter with 11-12 individuals aboard. But it's the Middle East right now, Don. Some information saying that Hezbollah, the powerful military force in Lebanon, who have sent a couple of missiles into northern Israel to test the Iron Dome, if you will, have moved troops close to the Israeli border. American networks have been told not to report this, if you will, as well as not to report any Israeli or IDF, Israeli Defense Force, casualties. Very peculiar thing happened 2 days ago. Wolf Blitzer, the CNN Jewish correspondent, you know him, remember him?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Wolf Blitzer was at a location there next to the border with Gaza, if you will. He maintained that they came under some kind of mortar or rocket attack. And actually, a young female Israeli Defense Force member was apparently wounded, maybe killed. And for those that saw that on CNN, there was this dramatic scene. Wolf Blitzer's cameraman kind of forgot the protocol that they are the follow given to them by the Israeli Defense Ministry. And he actually showed the Israeli female soldier on the side of the road hit, if you will, and Wolf Blitzer said to him, don't shoot the pictures. Move the camera away. Move the camera away. And then later on in the day, they showed that scene, that same sequence, Brother Allen.
Yes.
And that particular piece was edited out.
Wow.
You know, you had Wolf Blitzer saying, we're hearing mortar shells, and at that point is when the cameraman turned the camera to the Israeli soldier who had been wounded. Well, in the second editions and later on that night, that piece was edited out. So what our international desk is telling us is that there is a lot of censorship that is going on with regards to, first of all, the actual number of Palestinians that are being killed in Gaza by the Israeli military might and air power and naval power, if you will, as opposed to also the fact that the Israelis are starting to suffer some casualties, as well as Hezbollah has moved forces to Israel's northern border. You know, they fought a war a couple years ago, and Hezbollah more than held their own with the Israeli Defense Forces. So we're keeping our eye, Don, on the international scene, if you will. In fact, during tonight's program, if any sudden information comes through, we'll tap into it. By the way, there is an eight-hour difference here in the Midwest where we're at. And in Israel and along the Mediterranean course. So we've gotten a real good break, negotiated some pretty good relationships, and so we will begin to be able to look to that situation during the course of the ongoing battle. Now, some are saying there will be a truce, but it does not seem to be a reality because Hamas is merely reloading, if you will. They've fired probably close to 1,800 rockets into Israel, if you will. And there's been another 20 or 25 rockets fired by Hezbollah from inside of Lebanon across the Israeli northern frontier. Okay?
Yes, okay. Mr. Edwards, I was just kind of curious. We do have a caller, but before we get to that caller, you know, I was wondering what a former prime minister of the UK, Tony Blair, is saying. It looks like he's in the news quite a bit on this. And
Tony Blair, who was, you know, the popular, you know, with the Brits, popular prime minister, has really been a spear carrier for the Jewish lobby. I won't say that he's a spear carrier for the Zionists, But, you know, the Zionists were behind that very brutal murder of a 16-year-old Palestinian youth who was killed brutally in revenge and retaliation for the deaths of three Israeli high school students, if you will, though the Israeli authorities have never proved nor shown that Hamas or the Palestinian Authority had anything to do with it. But the Zionists are, and in fact there was a report by BBC early this morning, Mr. Allen, that there is concern about very, very extremist Israelis inside of Israel who have been, in fact, taking the measure, beating and killing Palestinians on the east and primarily the West Bank. Again, American news entities and outlets have been told that that's not to be discussed, okay? Maybe we'll get, you know, some American journalists will write a book in about a year and make a couple million dollars talking about what really happened in Jerusalem, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? Because that's where a lot of the mayhem is taking place. But you had a specific observation about Tony Blair, who, like I said, is a kind of a water carrier for the Jewish lobby.
Yeah, he's just saying that has warned that Israel and Hamas will not trust each other, and just kind of trying to get some insight on that. But we do have a caller who might have some insight on that, Mr. Everett.
Okay, let's get the caller. Let's get him in. Caller,
caller, you live on the air.
You have a question.
Oh, you guys! I tell you, you do a fabulous job. I love listening to you, Mr. Edwards. I've loved listening to you since I was a little girl. But
all right, thank you. Thank you.
I don't want to age you at all, but this is Barb Davis-White. And,
yes, from up in North Dakota. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I'm up in North Dakota. I'm on the way back to Minneapolis. I'm coming back to live in Minneapolis. And you guys have inspired me to come home. And
we're happy for that.
Yeah.
Well, and we were talking last week, you know, in terms of, and I'm an international girl. I've been to Israel 6 times. I snuck into Gaza.
Wow. Okay.
It was wonderful. I really enjoy Israel because Israel has a lot of technology, art. It's just a phenomenal place. There's no words for it because it's all been built since 1948. It was, you know, 50 years old as a state in 1998, and prior to 1948, if people read their history, there was nobody there. These Palestinians, they're called Palestinians, were brought back and kind of dropped off to make some photo ops and to say that, you know, the Jews had stolen land and blah, blah, blah. And that is, you know, they're going to argue this until the end of the world. But I went to Hamas because Hebron is in Hamas, where Abraham and Sarah are buried. And I just sat outside Abraham's tomb and I watched. I watched Israel bring food in, and I watched Israel bring water in. And Gaza is like, I can't even describe it. It's kind of like a big toilet. You know, they get a lot of money. What they're doing is, and Mr. Edwards is right on the money in terms of what's happening and no treaties. Every time Hamas does this, they look for reasons to do whatever they do. And Keith Ellison, I know he had them on the steps of the Capitol, and we filmed it. And I had a little Jewish boy wrap himself in a Palestinian flag up and film what was being said, because this is something that we almost have to stay out of. It's just like Iran right now, the Sunnis and the Shiites. That's not our deal. But the world right now,
Iraq.
Iraq, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you said Iran.
Yeah, I apologize.
Iraq,
yeah. And Iran is saying to the Palestinians and to Israel, please stop it, because they don't want, you know, anything to happen in terms of smoke coming that way. Should an atomic missile get fired and it becomes a parking lot over there. But I went in to see what was happening with my own eyes. You know, I love to go in. I went to Somalia a couple of years ago because I wanted to see what was happening for myself. And I'm kind of an adventurer like that. I like to see how things work. And the people in both countries are fantastic. what happens with the governments are the Palestinians, will, there's a skirmish, there'll be something. Well, we hurry up and we rush money over there. We throw money at the problem. And this time we can't. We're on our backs flipping like crappies. You know, we've got an immigration problem happening right now. We've got a healthcare problem happening right now. We've got murder and mayhem in our streets right now, which you guys will touch on. Minneapolis is, you know, I mean, the murder rate is skyrocketing. They're not going to say it honestly, which they didn't do when I ran for Congress. I couldn't even get. They wouldn't allow me to have the crime statistics. They gave them to me from 2 years prior. You know, things had escalated out of hand then. That was 2008. So what we're seeing, Mr. Edwards, is people are going to start flinging God knows what over there because we're not going to be able to write a check. We're not going to be able to pay both sides to knock it off. And our president, our fine president, is going to Martha's Vineyard, a $12 million house, and he's going on vacation, he said. So
right.
we're kind of up against the wall here in terms of leadership. And we're despondent. And today, Al-Qaeda said, the announcement on the Drudge Report was, Al-Qaeda said it's never been a better time to attack America.
Wow.
Yes,
so,
and when one talks in terms of security measures that are going on in the United States, starting with electronic surveillance and et cetera, our good friends at the NSA who are listening in, the whole situation with travel, the airports and et cetera. As you said, there are certain individuals coming across. Not all the people that are coming across are as young as they try to make you think. It's also the reason for some of the bodies, the many bodies that are being found, because what's happening, many of these young Central Americans, well, not many in the sense, but anytime you have 18, 20, 35 bodies found, their identities are being stolen, if you will.
Yes.
And those identities are being used by folks who are, in fact, coming in to the United States. Some are coming across the Rio Grande, if you will.
Yes.
And the National Security Council has, you know, clearly indicated. I mean, they're not going to tell us. I mean, they want us to enjoy the, you know, as we did here in the Twin Cities last night, you know, the All-Star game, baseball, football, basketball, soccer, you know, hockey, tennis, you know, just enjoy yourselves. Of course, this is also causing the economic problem because something you said, Ms. White, if we don't get our hands on this current situation in the Middle East, then we will see that age-old, quote-unquote, price hike for gasoline. And
yeah.
Americans really can't take many more hikes. In fact, the economists will tell you right now that we're really at beyond the threshold with $4 a gallon for gasoline, okay?
Yes.
And if things allegedly get out of hand and the petroleum industry talks about, oh, my God, we can't pump the amount of oil, if you will, and natural gas, we're going to be paying $6, $7, $8 for a gallon of gas by November, by Thanksgiving. That'll be our Thanksgiving turkey.
There you go. But I want to say more than that is that we don't know who's coming into the border, you know, on the Rio Grande, the border states. We don't know who's entering Canada right now into the United States. That's also a border. So we're in a situation now that the Al-Qaeda, and I talked about this when I ran against Pete Ellison, and, you know, he tried to laugh me down. He knows I'm telling the truth. We have not built an oil refinery in this country since 1972. I live in North Dakota. I catch trains out of here. I have to wait for 10, 12 hours for the oil trains, the tankers, because they're drilling oil like crazy up here, the shale oil.
Yeah.
That oil is being transferred down to Texas to be refined because there's no refinery up here.
That's right. That's right, and the United States does not want to utilize the refineries in Canada just across the borders because of issues of tariff and et cetera. And by the way, for our good American listening audience, the oil that's being refined into gasoline, natural gas, and et cetera, it's not going on the American market. It's going overseas.
There you go. We're selling oil to to Africa. We're selling oil, you know,
China, definitely.
The China is eating the oil up there. They've got, you know, we talked about our use of petroleum and oil, oil substances. You know, we make things out of oil. China is just, they've turned to capitalism, actually making money and doing industry and
yes.
trading things. So they're just there, and they are now moving to Africa to try to develop factories. And I was in Congo 4 times, and you could not get down the street because the Chinese have bulldozers. They're making roads in the middle of Congo.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, they're working. And so we are in a situation now that we have to assess, and I don't even know how we assess. We're so deep away from reality, and I put it on Facebook tonight, and I'm going to leave you guys with this. I said, we're being invaded, but don't worry, because we can always look for more lives on Candy Crush.
Absolutely. All right. Take care, and have a safe trip back in.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
Thank
you, Ms. White. Take care. All right. Yes, Ms. Allen, something that I, you know, that's needed and healthy, a little bit of reflections on the international scene and also what's happening on our borders, both north and south and et cetera. We in the African-American community, by the way, as you know, Mr. Allen, I'm talking to the choir, you know, we are really discouraged from talking about international affairs, if you will, as if we are dumbbells. But then when you talk about the education system, let me give you an example. I wonder how many, during the past school year, I wonder how many of our social studies teachers in our so-called inner-city schools with, a majority number of African-Americans in the classroom talked about international affairs, starting with Africa and starting with the real history of Black Africa. I wonder how many of them talked in terms of familiarizing their Black students about the Middle East, about the whole thing of marking boundaries and borders to actually put people in situations where they clash with each other because there were longstanding differences. In fact, Ms. White actually touched on something that is one of the tragedies of Somalia, okay? Borders made by European overlords, European colonial masters, and et cetera. We saw that. We see that in Africa. We see that in South America and Central America. We saw it to some degree in Asia, but because of the ability of the Chinese dynasties to be a formidable foe, except for that period of time during the so-called Boxer Rebellion, China was able to kind of do a better job with not allowing the kind of impurity that took place when you fix these borders, if you will. But I tell you, we in Black Africa and to some degree in South America got it stuck to us, but it was really Black Africa that got it stuck to them and, quote-unquote, the Middle East. She mentioned Shiites and Sunnis, if you will, and to a lesser degree the Kurds. No way in the world that those people should have been thrown into the crab's nest, if you will. In fact, at one point in time, 60, 70 years ago, the Kurds were being promised a homeland. Nobody even talks about that until something like what's going on in Iraq right now takes place, and then everybody, because the Kurds are fighting ISIS, that people will talk in terms of, we love the Kurds. You know, I bet you nobody in 8 out of 10 of our major colleges, Mr. Allen, I bet you they don't even talk about the Kurds or Kurdistan the dream of a Kurdistan. You understand what I'm saying? So anyways, phone lines are open.
Yes, they are. That number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. So, Mr. Edwards, from 2013, last year, till 2018, the U.S. is going to give Israel $3.15 billion a year. So what would happen if Israel did not get that money? And how much do you think Israeli taxpayers contribute and where the other $12 billion comes from? Non-USA.
Well, in the case of Israel, because Israel really doesn't have a lot of natural resources, they sure don't have any oil, because, I mean, that's the key to the Middle East. That's why we quote-unquote, love the brown-skinned Bedouins and Berbers of the Middle East, because, you know, we're pirating their oil. Israel, small country, by the way, does not have oil. They don't have really any other industry. You know, there's only so many dates and oranges that you can grow. You know what I'm saying, Don?
Yeah.
So to your question, the rest of the money augmenting and supporting, one thing one has to say about the Jewish community is that they support Israel. Now, they may not support a local black neighborhood. They may have, you know, been in there for 35 or 50 or 60 years and exploited it and et cetera, but they support their own. And so basically what happens, the powerful Jewish interest, which control a lot of things in America and Europe and Britain, are very apt at raising monies to keep Israel afloat. Okay, I mean, just give you an example. Right now as we speak, the United States, and for quite some time this has been going on, we refer you to any number of books and publications. We have, and I know you can appreciate this as a military, foreign military person, Ms. Stein, we have, sitting inside, primarily in the Negev Desert, we have approximately $1 billion in military equipment for the Israelis. Now, the Israelis must ask for permission to go into the storage facilities, if you will, some of them in caves and et cetera, similar to the caves that we have in, let's say, northeastern Kansas, if you will, the salt mines. They are good places. They're dry and et cetera, and so, you know, you talk in terms of stashing munitions, ammunition, and et cetera. Anyways, the United States has committed and has had there for many years, and this came as an outgrowth of the conflicts in Israel, and particularly a couple of the last conflicts in which the Israeli Defense Forces exhausted their supply of materials, you know what I mean, bullets, bombs, that kind of thing. So there's $1 billion worth of American military hardware stationed in the south of Israel, okay, and that is there. All the Israelis have to do, the prime minister or the defense minister picks up the phone, calls his counterpart in the United States of America, the president of the United States or the secretary of defense or secretary of state, indicates what they need. Let's say they need 650,000 gallons of aviation fuel to keep those American-made jets in the air, right?
Uh-huh.
Maybe they need 5.5 tons of munitions and et cetera, like the bombs that are, you know, that are descending on Gaza and killing Palestinian women and children, or missile or shells for
mm-hmm.
their gunboats that are offshore from Israel there in the Mediterranean. You see what I'm saying, Don?
Besides that, that's
not to include the cost of what the United States put into the kitty to construct and build the Iron Dome, which is a hell of a defense system until you start coming up with against long-range rockets that have GPS systems and have jamming devices. See,
mm-hmm.
we don't hear that kind of talk on CNN, Fox, and them. I repeat again, you know, GPS systems, jamming devices, and et cetera, within the what are when you start getting to rockets that are in the category of ICBMs, that's intercontinental ballistic missiles, then you've got to have, you're talking about smart bombs against smart rockets. Okay,
mm-hmm.
right? You understand
oh,
what
yeah.
I'm saying to you militarily,
oh, yeah.
Mr. Allen?
I understand,
and
yeah.
so Hezbollah is fully ready to send a much more sophisticated missile into Israel. In fact, Hezbollah has missiles that can go from the hills of Lebanon all the way to Israel's port in the far southern end of Israel, if you will, and into the Red Sea. That's the thing that Secretary Kerry and the military planners are concerned with at this particular hour. There's a lot of backdoor negotiations going on to try to keep Hezbollah. And Ms. White said something interesting when she talked in terms that actually as quiet as it's kept, and because they've been negotiating the nuclear thing in Geneva, you know, there's a lot of back, you know, the term, military term we like to use, Mr. Allen, espionage term. There's a lot of back channels going on.
Oh, yeah.
And really you'd be surprised how the Israelis, who are the quote-unquote godfathers of Hezbollah, are being encouraged, not to encourage Hezbollah to take the offensive against Israeli targets, right?
Yes. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because if you want to see things go up, see, well, here's what happened. Secretary Kerry and the State Department and Defense Department actually misread how angry the Palestinians have been at the Egyptians since the Egyptians overthrew a legitimately elected government, President Morsi, who will probably, you know, be executed and die while in prison, he and his brotherhood, if you will. They thought that they could manipulate Hezbollah's leadership, particularly the leadership of Hezbollah that is outside of Gaza. In other words, they're in Beirut. They're even in London, contrary to the British government saying they're a terrorist organization. You know, as Ms. White said, money will buy you anything, right, including access. And so what they're concerned about is that if the Iranians decide not to put any pressure or unleash their proxy in the Middle East, which is Hezbollah, that this thing could blow sky high. Now, Ms. White made a rather interesting observation about the use of nuclear weapons. We like to call them low-yield nuclear weapons, as if they kill less people. You know what I'm saying, Mr. Allen? But what is of concern is that given the mindset of a man by the name of Putin, about 2,000 miles to the north, right, but who has a military presence inside of Syria, that if the Israelis, and the Russians have let the United States know this for over 30 years, if the Israelis use even tactical nuclear weapons, you know, you guys used to kind of see that up there in Fort Lewis, Washington, that the Russians will make available similar tactical nuclear weapons, which would bring about the total destruction of Israel. That's how sensitive and delicate this is. So yesterday when Hamas turned down the offer, quote-unquote, that was being negotiated by the Egyptians, do you know that it actually had that it caught the United States and the Israelis off guard? Yeah.
Not good.
Yeah.
Not good at
Again,
all.
Again, that phone line is open. We're in case we're listening for some of our friends in the British Isles, if you will, who are basically stay on top of this. But let's get that phone number. The lines are open. If not, we'll be moving to some of the domestic stuff here.
Yeah, domestic stuff. The phone number here is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. You're listening to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio. Mr. Edwards, to the local stuff. I'm sorry, but, you know, I was really sick to my stomach when Mayor Hodges, well, the Star Tribune first, you know, as you know how they co-sign and promote everything for these DFL elected types, but she had on there, you know, let's do this brag on Minneapolis, use a hashtag on Twitter or when you post something, take a picture of something that you really like in Minneapolis and I posted to social media, and
like Target Field or something like that, where
there was
a lot of construction and and the Caucasian community made a lot of money. The black community didn't make a penny. But go ahead, is that what you're talking about?
Take a picture of something like that.
Go ahead.
You know, and I was just thinking, you know, maybe I get a call here or listen to the scanner and show up at one of these scenes when someone is shot dead and take a picture of that and hashtag it bragging, but. You know, people are really fed up with this placeholder mayor, and these are not just African-American people. This is some of the mainstream, a lot of the mainstream, I would go as far as to say, because of her lack of ability to pay attention to detail. And, and so what was happening here, you have a city in chaos. You have, you know, these consistent, you know, from guns to knives to beatings. The robbings on the corner, and then what was really funny, Mr. Edwards, is the other day in the Star Tribune, they had Police Chief Janae Hartle doing what R.T. Ryback used to do, telling folks that crime is down or up by 4% or something like that. And it doesn't really – it's a misuse of statistics because we know as just grassroots journalists that it's gotten out of hand. It's almost out of control at this point.
Absolutely.
And you know, at some point they're going to do like they do in or trying to do in Chicago, get some martial law happening because it's ridiculous.
That is being discussed. Now, I have to say this, Mr. Allen, for those that are out there saying, you know, the African-American community isn't doing anything, the Northside Violence Prevention Project under the auspices of Coach McKenzie, Al Flowers, Dr. Hayden, if you will, of a Turning Point, and some African-American women who, by the way, are, as we understand it, are negotiating right now for a meeting with Mayor Betsy Hodges, apparently in the next couple of days. People are hoping that that can happen because sometimes it takes women talking to women to get things moving, okay, and particularly fresh faces, fresh voices, and et cetera. Now, I was in a meeting yesterday morning, Mr. Allen, which included Sheriff Richard Stanek, a Republican, by the way, who saw fit to come in a room in which he and his driver were the only two Caucasians in the meeting, though there was a black sheriff's deputy, a sergeant, and there was a black Minneapolis police officer, if you will, one of the veterans. But it was chaired by Dr. Hayden, and it was a very productive meeting. I mean, this is my observation. I reserve the right to make those observations based on a long presence, if you will, in this city going back to 1959. And so it was very productive. A lot of things were put to paper, if you will, a lot of recommendations, a lot of suggestions of strategies, and et cetera. Now, there's more to be done. Dr. Hayden has indicated that he expects a time certain for a position paper, manifesto, on the issue of violence and public safety. To be forthcoming for the overall body. There are two other subcommittees, Mr. Allen, education and economic development. But it is quite obvious that the concern right now is the level of danger and violence in our city. And let me say this, because I made a promise to a young lady, if you will, yesterday, who I happened to be in a cafe, if you will. There were a group of three, and one of the individuals with them was a gentleman that I've known for many years. But the young lady surprised me because she is a part of a small group that includes a woman by the name of Alicia Clements, who's periodically called into our program, who have put together and have actually developed and designated a memorial to the young African-American child who regrettably died by strangulation last year in North Minneapolis. You remember that situation, don't you, Mr. Allen?
Yes, I do.
And what happened, I just found out yesterday that these ladies have made a memorial garden there along the 3300 block of Emerson Avenue North. Homies, if you will, the thugs, as people like to call them, we know what the real terminology is. Richard Sherman of the of the Seattle Seahawks went ahead and said what all of us had known. But anyways, they have made a beautiful memorial plot, and they are going to have a ceremony, and apparently before the end of the summer, in which they are going to dedicate a plaque to that young. Was a 12-year-old African-American child who died as a part of a fatal accident, if you will. You remember, there was a lot of emotion. And so I had said, well, you know, we certainly feel obligated to indicate that something positive like that has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to someone today who said that the garden is well kept. The brothers in the hood, making sure that it's well kept, making sure that it's protected, making sure that it's not trampled upon or disrespected, degraded, or whatever. So there are people attempting to do what they can to deal with this violence, if you will. But in the meanwhile, one of the things that was discussed yesterday morning in the meeting are the very disturbing numbers of African-American elite who have been saying privately and conversations with themselves that they're not concerned and interested in doing anything about the violence. Can you believe that?
Yo, that's crazy. That's
Yes, sir. And it came up in the meeting yesterday, and it was discussed in the presence of Sheriff Stanek as an example. A decision was made that it would be appropriate because we're finding out that some of these same people are the same folks that are going down and meeting with Betsy Hodges and Chief Hartow, meeting with the governor and et cetera, and are saying that this is not an issue, that this death and mayhem is not an issue in the African-American community. What is important are projects that they come up with in which, of course, as they're speaking with one side of their mouth, they're quoting a dollar figure with the other. I mean, really, this is what's happening. And I really, in the last 5 or 6 days, have been just absolutely taken back with some of the quote-unquote leadership that has talked about that is not a concern of theirs. Okay? You need to know
Interesting.
That.
Interesting. And I'm looking here, the Local and Regional Government Alliance on Race and Equity at the University of Minnesota at McNamara Alumni Center on the East Bank. They're having an event on, Mr. Edwards, on August 5th and August 6th. From 6 to 8:45 p.m. the first night, and from 7 a.m. on Wednesday to 5:30 p.m. on Wednesday, and featuring Minneapolis Mayor Betsy Hodges and St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman and Professor Nakima Levy-Pound, co-chair of Everybody In at the University of St. Thomas Law School. They're going to welcome people to this event, and it seems like they're, you know, again, this is what they do in those circles. They meet and they meet. They have forums. They have think tank groups, but nothing gets done. And this gives a really bad impression when those of us that know that this is basically just BS.
Let me say this, Mr. Allen. This, again, if you could just enlighten us a little bit more, but this meeting actually being obviously maneuvered and manipulated by the Humphrey School of Public Affairs, but this is about 3 weeks before I'm being told now there will be the very selective, by invitation only, retreat that $40,000 was given to the African-American Leadership Forum, if you will, under Mr. Cunningham and others, that they're having their retreat, if you will, sometime, and the statement is made in the fall. And that would seem to correspond about 2 to 3 weeks after this, I imagine, breathtaking conference dissecting the problems of the Negro. Is that part of it?
Yes. The Local and Regional Government Alliance on Race and Equity. So they're going to have a pretty little program, pretty little show. You know, it's the same old criminal justice, transportation equity, inequity in the racial wealth gap, the child welfare system operating in accordance with our values. I mean, this stuff is, they play this song and dance. It just, what happens, Mr. Edwards, I think the print gets prettier. You know, that's about it.
Can you share with us, Mr. Allen, from Studio A, could you share with us who some of the speakers and enlighteners are? I mean, you know, obviously.
Oh, yes. Yes, I would love to.
Yes. I mean, let's call it up on the computers here. I mean,
yes.
And make sure that our communities know that these will be the people that will be out there, and they will be analyzing how to deal with. Now, is there a consensus that the lack of equity and opportunity and inclusion and as well as the causes for mayhem and death and et cetera, that's an issue that needs to really be looked at, or have we had a consensus? Is there a consensus?
No, Ms. Harris, this is a dog and pony show for the beautiful people, okay? I'm going to go down here Tuesday, August 5th, from 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., registration 6 p.m., welcome event moderators John Powell, the Haas Institute for Fair and Inclusive Society Executive Director. Whoever thought that's his job. Julie Nelson, Government Alliance on Race and Equity Director. Now, I don't even know what – I got to figure out what the hell she's doing. Mayor Betsy Hodges, we have no clue what she's doing. St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman and Metropolitan Council Chair Sue Hayes. will be welcoming. Also with Professor Nakimi Levy-Pounds, co-chair of Everybody In. Don't know what that means. At the University of Minnesota.
Everybody
State,
In. Okay, does that mean in everybody. The water or
I mean,
in the
street,
pool? Or, I mean, what does that mean? Everybody In? What does that
in,
mean?
In downtown. I mean, I don't know. And then the Pillsbury House Theater, Breaking Ice. I guess that's some play or movie or video. And then John Powell comes back, and his topic is belonging, the relationship between spirituality and justice. And so,
wait a minute, now, I want to get my mind around this and get it clear. Spirituality and justice?
Yeah, as if these people.
Okay, so that's kind of like in the days when Negroes were being pulled out of their homes and out of jails and et cetera, and lynched, and then there would always be a white preacher who would bellow, if you will, notice the word bellow, to the high heavens that justice has been served, if you will, and that the purity of the white community has been preserved as these Negroes swing from the trees. Is that what we're talking about?
Oh yeah. This is right out of Ralph Ellison's a party down at the square. You know, they go,
okay,
they
that's
go,
what I was
kind go,
of thinking in the back
yeah,
of my mind.
They go burn a Negro right on the stakes in right downtown.
Okay, we can do like we did in Omaha back in 1921. Just take two big railroad ties, make them into a cross, nail the Negro to the cross, pour kerosene and gasoline on him, and then light him up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, and then we all, exactly. they sang Hallelujah and good white Christians come together holding their precious children close to their bosoms as they watch the Negroes fry, right? Or we can do it like we did up in Duluth the same period of time, 1921. Take them out of the jail up there because a Caucasian woman said that Negroes had raped her, and then just hang them along the streetlights there right in front of the public safety building in Duluth. Okay, I just want to kind of get my mind right. Continue to read who the other presenters are on day one, Mr. Allen.
Okay, and that's John Powell, Betsy Hodges, Chris Coleman, Sue High, Nakima Levy-Pounds, and John Powell comes back and closes it out.
Now what about the next day?
Next day, Wednesday, August 6th, from 7:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. But obviously this is not for any
wait,
of the
wait,
community.
Wait, from what time? 6:30 a.m.?
7:30 a.m., on that Wednesday, the 6th to 5:30 p.m. 7:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m.
Oh, this is a full day of activity. Give us the breakdown on that. I mean, I think that, you know, us coloreds need to know how we're being discussed.
7:30, registration, coffee, light breakfast. 8:30 a.m., welcome. Moderators, Julie Nelson and John Powell again. Then they have the Negro Show, I guess. Youth performances from the community. And then they have Glenn Harris, Center for Social Inclusion President.
Center for Social Inclusion. Now, where is this located? Cambridge, Massachusetts, or Chicago, or Los Angeles, or where?
I'm looking it up right now because this is kind of like pissing me off a little bit. New York. Center for Social Inclusion. 111.
Now, is he affiliated with... Is he affiliated with Columbia or NYC, or who is he affiliated with institutionally?
I will tell you that right now. Center for Social Inclusion, blah, 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 blah. God, this guy is weird looking. No, I don't have it's his own organization. It's their own organization.
Okay, so he's headquartered in New York. Okay, go on. We need to get that out. Phone lines are open, by the way, after you get through with this, in case folks have any observations.
We had a caller, I think. Well, caller, call back. I'll make sure that you get on the line. I apologize.
Yeah, do that. Okay.
And it's Glenn Harris from the Center of Social Inclusion. He's a president. He says his topic is true democracy, racial equity, opportunities for government and our communities. This is like a liberal. This is a DFL or Democrat love fest. The workshops start at 10. Lunch at 11, of course. Workshops again.
What are
one.
The workshops, Don? Let's get the workshop. I mean, the workshops are what? What are the identification tags on the workshops?
Workshop from outreach to engagement, developing community leadership and commitment. Operating in accordance with our values, improving access to government contracts, The next one, operating with according to our values, improving access to government jobs. Improving jobs, closing the racial equity gaps in jobs, improving success for all. This is so superficial. Next one, improving educational results, closing the racial equity gap in education and improving success for
now,
all.
Now, who is one of the panelists there, Superintendent Bernadette Johnson?
It doesn't have the panelists by name. It just has the workshop listed. And like
I see. And the presenters at each workshop. I see. And our facilitators, yeah. Whatever the proper terminology is. Go right ahead, Don. Just give us the whole thing right up to 5:30.
Inequity and the racial wealth gap, the child welfare system, improving outcomes for the children and families of colors, innovative partnerships to support place-based strategies for racial equity. You know, and that's it. That's all of them. Criminal justice, environmental justice. I'm pretty sure we'll have Karen, what's her name? They were doing that environmental justice piece or someone like that. But again, Mr. Edwards, you have these people that, you know, are allotted a particular amount of money where they have to do an event, you know, where it's part of their funding that they have to do this kind of stuff. So other than being, to me, meaningless, this is just another meeting where a friend of mine, Tim Wise, said that, you know, you can meet till you're blue in the face. Doesn't mean anything's going to get done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, okay. this is for the pretty people. This is definitely for the pretty people. And it has getting
involved. Okay, here's where I'm at, Don, as a member of the Northside Violence Prevention Task Force that's in play right now, and particularly in light of the efforts being mounted by the organization known as COI, who were in yesterday's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, who are out there on the streets putting their lives on the line. When I hear discussions about dealing with the issue of violence, so you don't have any names of any panelists, if there are any. And so who is the facilitator for that particular panel dealing with crime, violence,
it does not
I mean, is there a name?
It does not have a name.
I see. Okay, gotcha. I see how that's going. So this is being put on by the University of Minnesota. Is it the African-American department, or is it the Hubert H. Humphrey School of Public Affairs? Who's actually sponsoring it?
Well, I would like to get this absolutely straight for our people that are listening, and it is a project. This project taking place under the leadership of John Powell, director of the Haas Institute for Fair and Exclusive Society at UC Berkeley, and Julie Nelson, director of...
Let me back up. Dr. Powell is also now at the University of California, Berkeley. I thought he was still at the University of Minnesota.
No, it looks like he's bringing his sideshow here to the University of Minnesota. It says Nelson is the former Seattle Office for Civil Rights and architect of the city's racial and social justice initiatives. This is Nelson. And so, you know,
and that's where our mayor has been visiting lately. She's been visiting in both Portland, Oregon, and Seattle, Washington. Oh, I see. They brought her out, let her familiarize herself with what they're doing in Seattle and the University of California at Berkeley. Okay, gotcha. So this is kind of a family affair.
I don't know if it's a family affair. I think it's for the beautiful people. I mean, I know that much. I'm just looking. I'm
well,
looking
it's got to be a family affair, though. I mean, if our beloved mayor has been out there meeting with the folks over the last number of months, you know, she's doing a lot of extensive traveling here back and forth. In fact, people say that the only time she and the chief police see each other when they pass at the airport. So anyways, so that's the genesis for my comments, sir, that this is kind of like a family affair, just kind of bring our friends in. I imagine the stipends must be real nice. What, $10,000, $15,000?
Oh, it doesn't have that detail, but I am looking. I am definitely looking through this because it's a mess, a hot mess, as they say. And I'm just going through all the pages here in the studio just trying to figure out.
How did you happen to come about this, Don? As we were talking in studio, I saw you at one of your computers. You just happened to call that up, or were you familiarized? Had you been familiarized with this event?
I was briefed on it by someone that knows that I am very concerned about crap like this. So they actually sent it to me, and it was just in time for the show. So
look, let's do this because it was 2 hours difference. We need to commit ourselves here on this program to see if we can get through with the telephone call. And because of the 2 hour difference in Seattle and University and Berkeley, we need to be able to ask the question of the two key principals, Ms. Nelson in Seattle and Dr. Powell in Berkeley. You know, what do they feel will be accomplished, particularly given the level of violence and mayhem that we're going through right now here in Minneapolis and St. Paul? You know, we'll try to do that for our listening audience. And if we can, through Mr. Allen, who's our technician, if we can find a way to get them on the phone, and, you know, of course, you do an interview with them, and we could play it next Wednesday. I'm just fascinated to know how this came about, because I thought that Dr. Powell was still here at the University of Minnesota.
Oh, Dr. Powell is at St. Thomas, actually, and I'm actually...
Oh, no, Powell.
You said Powell, Don.
Let's get this right so we don't get ourselves liable. Dr. Powell's identification showed him at the University of California, Berkeley, for a particular school. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, sir. You're absolutely correct. Project
there
overview.
You go.
Okay, John Powell. And I'm actually sending Ms. Nelson an email right now.
Uh-huh.
And see if she can call in. So we can ask
because there is a two-hour difference in Seattle, as we said, as in Berkeley. Maybe we can get her to give us a call and kind of enlighten us because, we have in our program could go, it can go until 10 o'clock our time,
mm-hmm.
which
yes.
is 8 o'clock their time.
Yep. And let me just make that big so she can see it so they can't say, well, I didn't see the phone number. There we go.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we'll see what happens here if we get a call.
Okay. And this event will be in the middle of August, and it will be looking at things such as equity and policing and community safety and things like that. Well, that should be quite a quite a discussion because, like I said, I renew my question about who is actually at the University of Minnesota sponsoring this. I mean, but you say it's part of a project, okay?
Yeah, that's what it is. Okay, I just sent that off. Let me go back there. So, okay, it just has a project. Let me go programs, locations, lodging. Okay, it's being held at the – this looks like, you know, this is the equivalent of a rock tour, basically, and
mm-hmm.
it looks like they're just stopping off in Minnesota. Let me look at the regional networks here.
Oh, it's kind of like a carnival show.
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
And so, there's not really a Neva Walker.
Well, no, it has to be meaningful because this is a two-day event, and it's at the University of Minnesota. Am I correct, or is it at the Radisson Hotel at Seven Corners, or is it actually on campus at the Humphrey Institute, or, I mean, where is the physical location?
Okay, the physical location is the McNamara, the first night. I got ready to drop another bombshell on you.
That was named for Pinky McNamara, the brother of Bob McNamara, two Caucasians who played for the Minnesota Gophers back in the 1950s, Bob and Pinky.
And the next night, the next day is at Wiley Hall on the West Bank. But
Yes.
But there was a 2014 annual conference back in March, and the keynote was Neva Walker, the former state representative. You remember her?
Yes, I remember Neva.
The first African-American woman elected to the Minnesota legislature, and she ran in president's second-rate grassroots campaign, blah, blah. She serves 8 years working on teen pregnancy, disparities, foster care, health, welfare, affordable housing. She was chair of the Mental Health Committee. That's all here. In 2008, she stepped down to return to her organizing roots. Since coming to the Bay, San Francisco, Neva spent time supporting black organizing project founded by the Center for the Third World.
Okay, let me get this right. So for transparency, again, for our domestic and international audience, former state representative Neva Walker has relocated at some point in time to the San Francisco, Oakland area. Is that right?
That is correct. That is correct.
Okay, because I know that we had at least a couple of activists within community who spent some time in the Bay Area here in the last couple of months, allegedly working on some kinds of projects. That makes a lot of sense. Go right ahead, Mr. Allen.
And so, yeah, I'm just looking at the schedule.
Now, you're talking about Neva Walker. So Neva was brought back here as Dr. Powell is being brought back here. So she was here, March of this year,
It was actually in Portland, Oregon in March. It's over with. I'm just looking at the people. I was looking through the names of the people that presented, and she was one of them. I said, well, I know that name. And I, sure enough, I had confirmed it by the picture.
Okay. Also, she didn't come back here to Twin Cities, but she made a presentation in Portland, Oregon.
She was the keynote for governing for racial.
And I think that's the same time that our beloved mayor was one of the times she was in Portland.
Mm-hmm. So you think the mayor goes up to her and says, hey, can y'all move that gig to Minneapolis for a weekend, couple days? You know, that's what it sounds
probably
like.
Probably could, because yeah. I think that if you go deep enough, you're going to find out that the financing and funding was being done by the Northwest Area Foundation.
Oh, that's what I'm looking for right now. Glad you said that.
Yeah.
Planning.
And at
planning
that time, Mr. Gary Cunningham was still involved. In fact, he and the wife traveled together to Portland. They were there a couple times, went up to Seattle. That's probably where they met Miss Nelson.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's Don, that's the reason I said family affair. But go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I'm checking these names here. Writer Education, New Hampshire. Okay, and that's nobody from Minnesota. Walada Imarsha. Looks like a African-American woman that might have. The name change thing. 2014 workshop materials. Nothing really coming up.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've spent enough time. I mean, the telephone lines are open. If there anyone that has any questions, we'd certainly like to help people be able to make reservations to attend this workshop, which will basically highlight our own beloved Mayor Betsy Hodges, if you will. We will see the return of one of our prodigal sons, Dr. Powell, if you will. We will see the presentation or participation of one of our academicians at St. Thomas University here in the Twin Cities. Okay, I think it's all kind of coming together, if you will, and it would make sense, the $100,000 that was set aside and given to Democratic Councilwoman 8th Ward for the equity piece. Oh, babe, yeah, this has been well put together. No doubt about it.
I mean, this
is to help us get our minds right.
Yeah, I have the sponsors, government co-sponsors, Hennepin County, League of Minnesota Cities, Local Progress, Mayor's Initiative Project, Met Council, Minneapolis Park Board, Minneapolis Public Schools, Ramsey County, St. Paul Public Schools, the academic co-sponsors, University of Minnesota, University of California, Berkeley, University of Wisconsin, Madison. Community co-sponsors, African American Leadership Forum, Alliance for Metropolitan Stability, APEC, the Housing Consortium, Appetite for Change, Center for Change Policy Planning. Who else is on here that the rest of them aren't care about? Higher Minnesota, Isaiah.
Okay. Higher Minnesota, that's our good friend Major Lewis King, if you will, of OIC and the United States military.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe, you know what, Mr. Allen, and maybe we could get a call from one of the participants that I understand met this afternoon to begin to put together the plan for the summit that they were given $40,000 for, and were given a mission statement by Senators Klobuchar and Franklin. Maybe we can get somebody to talk in terms that this it's a two-day event, and it almost sounds like a retreat, but the only thing is when you go on a retreat, you stay at the location during the entire duration. But maybe this is going to be palmed off as the retreat
funding
for the Negro community.
funding support, Mr. Edwards, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota, the Loom Foundation, L-O-O-M, and the Northwest Area Foundation.
Oh, just as Mr. Edwards said.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why we've been watching people as they travel back and forth to the Northwest. When we talk about Northwest here, we're talking about Seattle, Tacoma, and Portland, and, of course, down into California. Oh, there it is. Well, whoever your sources were, Mr. Allen, they had a pretty good idea. I have reason to believe that this is really to be the substitute or be palmed off as the retreat that the African-American community was encouraged and ordered to put on to see that our minds are right as a community by our two United States senators. I mean, we're talking about high politics here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I wonder why no one else has brought this up, event up, except Ronnie and Donnie.
No one knows about it, really. I mean, this is a tight...
the world knows about it now.
Yeah, we're going to find out about it. Oh, I'm blasting it everywhere. I'm not even done with it. You know, maybe we get
to... Sure. Let's also let our audience know that this program, as usual, can be found on demand. Is there some specific reference that we need to give so that the folks can tell their buddies and friends? Because you just gave a wealth of information, which raises some real serious questions about what the motive and intent is as it pertains to this conference in mid-August here in the Twin Cities.
I think I'm going to get some flyers and drop them off over north at the neighborhood hub so people can pick up some flyers there so we can see who shows up at the front door.
That is very good. I think that's excellent. You know, again, the Ron and Don Show just wants to be helpful.
Yeah, that's all. And we have a caller. Stand by.
Oh, let's get the caller in, Don.
Caller, you are... Oh, is he in the queue or she in the queue? Stand by here, Mr. Edwards. Okay, they hung up as soon as I went to them. So I'm sorry, caller. You can go back in the queue or you can listen from your computer. Choice is yours. So, yeah, I just got a message from...
All right, let's get that phone number out again, Don, right quick there, you know, so... If somebody really wants to call, they have any questions for us, you know.
Yeah, that number is 347.
I was expecting to get a call, as I said, out of London, but maybe that'll have to come later. Go ahead, Mr.
Yeah, that number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Yeah, very interesting. And
okay.
Crime is down. Crime is down, Mr. Edwards. It's there's no crime. It's down.
Oh, there's basically, I mean, no crime. I mean, what crime are you talking about? That's just some folks stirring up, fear tactics and et cetera. I mean, everything is copacetic. You know what I'm saying? I mean, come on. You know, of course, the sheriff didn't say that in the meeting with the committee to address and reduce violence, the Northside Committee, but... Yeah. Oh, boy. Okay, Mr. Allen. What else we got tonight? We've got stuff going on.
We touched on this last week, but after I read the article over again in the Star Tribune about color class, I'm a little disturbed because it says city officials such as Council President Barbara Johnson expressed confidence 2 years ago that the firm's hiring would rebound. This is, we're talking about color class. But
right,
now,
the Danish firm, by the way. That firm is a firm out of Copenhagen, Denmark, that is a international firm. Yeah, getting a lot of good American tax dollar money.
Yeah. But he said now Johnson said the city goals in general might be too ambitious because employer reports they're having trouble finding workers.
Well, but here's the thing. In that same article, Mr. Allen, Color Pass indicated that they were moving some of their operations overseas, back overseas, if you will, to places like China, Indonesia, and et cetera. You don't think those are the jobs that were supposed to go to the 119 colored people, do you, here in Minneapolis?
Okay. Oh, of course. And Mr. Edwards, we have a caller.
All right, get the caller.
Caller, go ahead, please.
Gentlemen, am I on the air?
Yes, you're live on
the air.
Yes, you
are.
Oh, thank you very
much.
Right
ahead, M.
Paul, I'm a longtime caller. I'm Mr. M. I love you guys, and I just thought I'd call in with a couple comments, if that's okay.
Go right ahead, sir.
And the first comment I want to just make is, you know, I really appreciate, Mr. Edwards, I know you're into the local scene now, but I really appreciate you talking about the national scene, especially what's going on in the Middle East. Because
thank you,
I think the people over here don't really understand what a long-standing feud that, I mean, really, you can pick up your Bible. You can see some of the beginnings of what that long-standing feud is, and that feud continues. And this is has the potential, actually, to end our world. So, I really appreciate
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. There you are. Yes.
I really appreciate you bringing that to the forefront, because I think a lot of people see this on the news and they see this in the paper, and they don't really realize that the significance of this conflict has the potential to disrupt our lives here in this country. So I think you're doing a great service to the community by enlightening the community on that.
Thank you. Appreciate it, sir. Okay.
But also, I do want to say, I want to say how you've given a shout-out to people like Dr. Hayden. And, you know, there was a parade down 4th Avenue this past Saturday. You know,
mm-hmm.
I happened to look at the parade. And Dr. Hayden marched and his son. And it's just good to see that their people are continuing to kind of keep that, you know, stay in the faces of our mayors and our chiefs of police and our politicians, because we really have to continue to let them know they really are serving us too, and we deserve spot at the table, and they are serving us too. They're elected to serve all the people of this community, and unless we really stand up and tell them what we need and what we want and what they're not doing, I mean, they need to be held accountable for that. So that's the only reason I called. I wanted to say I want to give you a shout-out for going back from the history lesson for the community and continue the current things that you're doing. So I'll let you
all right,
go
thank
that.
You, Evan. And like I said, to others that are listening, the phone lines are open. If you have any questions about us, particularly with the Middle East situation, feel free to give us a call. Thank you, sir.
All right. And we're
Mr. Allen, by the way, our deference to Dr. Hayden and et cetera, the official name of the group that is now meeting, met with the sheriff yesterday, the North Minneapolis Violence Prevention Project. Okay?
And this is going to be nothing like the NCRT.
No, not really. Now, not given the representation that is there. As we said, at the meeting a week ago that led to the formation of the three subcommittees, there were 75 citizens of all persuasions, if you will, Northside residents and et cetera. As I said before, again, so that people understand that and it ties into the story, the picture's really in the story on Coy. In yesterday's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, a position paper is being developed, and it's probably not going to be as developed as quickly as everyone would have liked to have seen, because there's just a multiplicity of areas of concern and et cetera. But this paper is going to deal with, problem statements, proposed solutions, introduction of solutions, application of solutions, if you will. And so folks need to be advised, particularly those that are working to undermine this project, if you will, to some way pirate it, if you will. I don't think that it will be pirated by the African American Leadership Council, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. This is not being put in place to be pirated, and information taken over to the governor or, the mayor by people who have had no commitment or support. And I repeat again what I said earlier in this program, Mr. Allen, and I see that we have 15 minutes left, right? We're going to 10 o'clock hour, is that correct?
Yes, we are.
That I'm fully disturbed by the statements that are now being discussed and attributed to leadership, that they do not see the issue of the violence and et cetera as being something as, that is of the of interest to them. And yet these same people are in meetings with elected officials and et cetera. In fact, it is interesting that the only elected political leader at this point who had no equivocation, was State Senator Jeff Hayden 2 weeks ago, okay, in a copyrighted story in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Now, I had been waiting for additional appointed leaders, if you will. When I say appointed, I'm talking about those such as like the Met Council and some of the other bodies, indicating that they certainly were interested and committed and supported the project, okay? But, you know, I realized that it wasn't forthcoming, and then going into the weekend, particularly on Saturday and Sunday, conversations ebbing back here to yours truly, that this was just a bunch of hogwash, that these discussions and statements about violence was a waste of time because folks had to make money kind of thing, okay? Uh-huh. And actually what I'm seeing is a reaffirmation, if you will, and the support of that doctrine. You know what I'm saying? So this is not a good situation for those that are, you know, sitting at the left hand. Notice I didn't say the right hand, Don. Sitting at the left hand of the master, if you will.
Yeah.
Many of them, you know, sit at his feet and in between his legs. But anyways, I... this is not good because some of the white elected politicians, such as the sheriff in this county and others, under probing from Senator Hayden, are raising some questions about just what are you people committed to, you know what I mean? Now, you remember we were told that there was going to be a press conference this past Tuesday. I wish that we could get a call in. How did that press conference go, if you will?
Well, we have a caller on the line that might be able to answer that.
Oh, look, please put them on. Let's get them on. Sure.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
How you doing there, Brother Pinback and Brother Pullback? It's good to hear that you
all right,
are
my brother.
Man,
how's
fight.
It going? Good.
Listen, I wanted to kind of like look at the bigger picture because I need to keep our eyes on this money trail, seeing how we kind of following the small timers. That's where, Mr. Edwards, were you aware of that we had two major banks this under investigation? We got the U.S. Wells Fargo, and
you
we also had a charity
one. We caught
that,
Wells Fargo. The other one was that First Bank or
U.S. Bank.
Yeah. Well, it used to be First Bank, U.S. First Bank. Oh, they're under investigation again? For what this time?
Well, you know, all of this good information came out right after the president left. And we also had on that same day a group called Charity Watch who found out that the Otto Bremer Foundation out of St. Paul had a group of trustees that were paying themselves a little bit more than what they should be getting.
The philanthropic trust association, reported them.
The
they reported
Foundation.
Them, didn't they? Yeah, it only appeared one day. In fact, I copied it and put
July
it in the
first Tuesday, July the first.
Yes, I put it in the secret files. I was amazed that we didn't have more in-depth discussion about the Bremer Foundation in that regards and the examination of U.S. Bank and Wells Fargo, but I guess you have friends in high and powerful places. You know you get things squashed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because some of this is going to go all the way back to 2007, 2008.
Oh yeah.
With all of the mortgage fraud and et cetera, in which you know Barack
well,
Obama should have ordered
it mentioned,
his secretary.
Mr. Edwards. It mentioned in the paper also that those same bank institutions were the ones that caused a lot of minorities to lose their homes. You had Freddie Mac, you had this one.
Freddie Mac and Freddie Mae.
You had that that one that a lot of the minorities here used a lot when they were getting all those extra mortgage money, you know, but they were buying lavish cars and going on vacation. And a lot of these people went underwater because the banks were making big juicy deals with these banking institutions. And that was what they found out in the investigation. But nobody, no congressmen, no senators, nobody said anything here on the local level.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, why am I not surprised? We're glad that you called in to put it on the record, because Mr. Allen and I in our production meetings had kind of been wondering at what point somebody was going to say something, particularly with regards to the Bremer Foundation, because I understand that there's also an examination going on some of the dealings of the Northwest Area Foundation.
Well, you know, the Northwest Area Foundation, I tried on Mr. Allen back when you all had first started this show. There was a book out, and the book was done by the, I believe it's called the think tank group out of Washington. But they were stating back then that Jerry Cunningham and that organization was not paying attention to the people who live in the community. All of the investors and all of the information were coming from the in the community. So I thought that that was something that if you got a Washington-based think tank group that's really overlooking and seeing that things are not done right, well, why? How come they don't come in here and run some kind of investigation? Because these people are operating in an ethnic free zone. Everything goes full bang mode. You know, no boundaries when it comes to corruption.
Well, here's the thing that's interesting about that is that the current United States Attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota, Mr. Andy Lugar, he has the availability of the FBI's corruption special unit, if you will. I kind of wondered how and if they were looking at some of this. You know what I'm saying? But the problem is that the current federal attorney, you know, given his wife's relationship with with the General Mills Foundation as the president of its foundation, you kind of get into a situation where, you know, big bosses say that, you know, don't step on our toes, okay? And so it's more popular to do the kind of ghetto law enforcement, you know what I mean, round them up and kind of look at the black folk, the poor people, and others, and kind of do the sensational there, and kind of put the Bremer Foundation and the Northwest Area Foundation and Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank, kind of put them in the back drawer, you know what I mean? And so it kind of, people kind of forget about things. You know, we got the short attention span as human beings. And so, you know, sir, keep that in mind, if you will. Because normally if you're an ambitious U.S. attorney, boy, you jump on something like that. Because in what you're talking about, you said right at the introduction, that let's talk a little bit about the real big money, okay? And when you talk about the banks and et cetera, I mean, you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars, in fact, and as pertains to the amount of fiscal paper that was lost. You're talking about billions, aren't you?
Oh, most definitely billions, and there were a lot of issues pertaining to how minority that didn't know exactly the real ramifications of how their mortgage was handled and how it was drew up. But a lot of them came in on the blind side, and they got misled and misguided by the banking institutions. And you know, and
absolutely,
I know that's an open game here.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Well, appreciate it, sir. You know, we certainly got it on the record, and as Mr. Allen and I say, that this program can be recaptured on demand. Mr. Allen, will, as we close out, we'll talk in terms of how you can do that. You know, a lot of people call me and say, you know, I missed the program, want to catch it, and et cetera. And so, you know, I say you can always get the program on what is called on demand, you know.
On demand.
Get on
yep.
your computer and you can call the program and you can examine everything that we talked about and calls that we received and statements that were made. You know, it's an open
Well, you guys have been telling it like it is for quite some time now. I'm a little shocked that a lot of people are beginning to just wake up, because you remember back when you all first started the show, I'm the only person they would call in, and the ones that did call in were they were looking for the carrots and sticks and some of the monies that being handed out in the form of 501c.
Yes.
And when that money don't fall into their hands, they call you guys up and, oh, you know, Mr. Elbs, we used to get that money all the time. Don, you know, I was at the meeting. You know, these people meet. They should be drunk when it comes to meetings because you never really get anything done in these meetings. What are you doing in these meetings? You guys just meet. Only to have the small people miss out while the selected bourgeois crew get them some nice money to ride around in their nice cars and their nice suits.
And take trips. That's it. All right, sir. Well, we're down to our last 4 minutes. Appreciate it,
yes.
And we will stay on top of it. Donnie and Ronnie will stay on top of it. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sure enough. Yeah. And, Mr. Edwards, it looks like I have gotten approval to drop off flyers at the Neighborhood Hub in North Minneapolis.
And so,
you know, I have this thing, you know, in North Minneapolis, you know, there's like 240 nonprofits. There's a little bit more than that. But I was thinking that maybe if we cut down to 10, okay, nonprofit North Minneapolis. Now, the Neighborhood Hub would be one. Urban League would be one.
Well, you got to have NAS because they got the most money of any of the nonprofits.
You got to have NAS. 22
million.
But now, if you shrink it down, so NAS is down on Broadway, and the Neighborhood Hub is up on Lowry and Oliver. This would almost force NAS to share some money with the Hub because of the proximity, you know, in that in so-called environment. You know,
That's something that Sonia Samuels should have probably negotiated, but I'm pretty sure that she's going to be protected to the extent that her grant was accepted as is, and I don't think her grant to the federal government, which allowed them to receive $26 million a couple years ago, I don't think it calls for any sharing. Oops. don't think it calls for any sharing, but you would think that in their close proximity, you would think that they would want to come together, if you will, combine their resources, knowledge, and et cetera, you know. Good idea.
Well, they're saying they have 70 facilitators or navigators or whatever the hell they call those people and 700 clients. That means that each navigator, you know, has 100.
Has 10 clients, though.
Well, yeah, they say they have 700. So
they say they have 700
clients,
right?
And 70 navigators. Yeah, so I'm looking at this.
So that gives us that's 10. That's 10 clients per navigator. Boy, they should get a lot done with that.
Yeah, and I don't know if they're even close to getting anything done. So, I don't see a change. And you can't put a shirt on a kid and say he's going to graduate or she's going to graduate from college in 2035 when the likelihood and the statistics and the data in that area said they're more likely to be shot dead or it dropped out or in jail. So there's something they have to overcome. I just wanted to throw that in there before our last closing minute here.
Yeah, well, by the way, when you talk about 2035 and college and et cetera, you're talking about basically children who haven't been born yet.
Mm-hmm.
Basically by age 25, 24, 26, you're basically through with college, aren't you?
Yeah, you should be unless you're like me. But anyway, yeah, you should be. Yeah, get out of high school 17, 18, and be done by the time you're, 21, 22? Exactly.
Absolutely. Start doing your graduate work, be through with that by 24, 25. I mean, you would think it's 2014 now, you know, 2035, that's 21 years, right?
Yeah, approximately.
So
yeah.
Most of the children just being born, you know, I've always wondered about that timeline, but hell, who are we? I mean, to raise that question. But anyways, Mr. Allen, it looks like we can wrap this evening. I think it's been a very enlightening program. Our international desk will continue to bring us up to speed next week. So continue to join us as we take a look at the full spectrum. Little old James Brown, bring us home.
Oh, yeah.
Some people say we got a lot of malice. Some say it's a lot of nerve.